If that process starts, then our hearts will become purified and our prayers become more powerful, especially when we pray for the good health of our exalted devotees who are leading us in this movement. This verse is a very important verse in Srimad Bhagavad Gita. Like all other verses, it is telling us specifically in chapter 11 that now is the point when actually Krishna has already shown his divine universal form. He is now displaying his universal form in front of Arjuna at this point. Sanjaya, Bhagavad Gita writes, Prabhupada writes in the purport, Sanjaya is describing the indescribable. Why? Because actually, while this description of hundreds and thousands of suns are given to describe something about the universal form, it is still not even close. It is not even close to actually coming to describe how actually Krishna is. And this is not even the transcendental form of the Lord. This is actually the Lord's material form in that sense. Though it is coming from the Lord, it is actually a manifestation of this material world. If this material, if this universal form of the Lord can be so powerful, then how much powerful must be this wonderful transcendental form of the Lord? So, anything to do with the Lord is completely transcendental. And here, that is why Prabhupada makes it a point to tell us that even though Sanjaya was describing the universal form of the Lord, he could not find any material item. The closest he could get to describe the Lord was to use some material superlative. That too was a superlative. It is like thousands and thousands of suns. One sun is considered very powerful already. How much must be for thousands and thousands of suns, these thousands? We cannot imagine. But Krishna is still considered indescribable because he is so powerful. In fact, in Bhagavatam, it is very nicely stated to us that when we are relating to the Lord, we must always remember one important point. That finally, if we relate to the Lord, we must understand that the understanding of the Lord is really beyond the range of our perception. This point is very important to us. We must understand that why sometimes we think Krishna is not talking to me. Why is it that Krishna is not reciprocating with me? Krishna is reciprocating with us, but his reciprocation is on the transcendental level. Our idea, perceived notion of his reciprocation is on the material level. That is where we always get into trouble. You know, Kunti Mata in her prayers, she says very nicely, Namaste Purusham Swagyam. Right? She pays obeisances to the Lord because she says that he is the supreme person and he is the original. Then she says, Ishwaram Pratadeya Param. This is very important. She says that, Lord, you are beyond. You are the oldest, you are the original, and you are unaffected by the qualities of this material world. Unaffected by the qualities of the material world means you cannot be of this material world. One who is of this material world must automatically become touched by the material world. Then he goes on to say, Alaksham Sarvabhutana. Yet, despite not being touched by this material world, the beauty is that you are existing. You are continually existing in this world. And this world is actually coming from you. But you are existing in the most wondrous of fashion. Antar Bahir Abhisthitam. You are inside this world and you are outside of this world. Inside of this world, because this entire world is a creation of the Lord. But is the Lord affected by his creation? No. The Lord is never trapped by his own creation. Therefore, he is not of this creation. If supposing I engineered and designed this building, Ishwara Temple, I know where the staircases are. I know where the fire exits are. I will be the last person to be trapped in this building. Because I know how to come out of this building. So the engineer of this building, of this material world, is Krishna. He cannot be touched by this world because he is not of this world. He created this world, but nothing in this world can touch him. This is the beauty of the Lord. This is why the Lord is indescribable, because he is beyond the range of our perception. If we try to understand Krishna by our material senses, Prabhus and Matajis, Bhagavatam tells us that we become frustrated. We become frustrated. You know, in 6.4.29 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Daksha, the progenitor of this universe, he nicely makes a very important statement in this prayer. We should remember this prayer because then we will not be frustrated with the material energy of the Lord. He says, Yadya Niruktam Vachasa Nirupitam Diyakshadeva Manasotayasya Mahabhut Swarupam Gunarupabhitata Savai Inapayam Sharga Lakshanaha. This is an important verse that is directly related to this verse. Daksha prays first of all, obeisances to Krishna. He says that, he makes his statement to the Lord. He says anything which is expressed by material vibrations, anything expressed by the material vibrations, you only vibrate materially with your mouth. That material vibration, anything that is expressed by material vibration, anything that is ascertained by your material intelligence, we ascertain and conclude so many things using our intelligence. If we look at someone, we judge it by our material intelligence. We decide something with our material intelligence. Anything which is experienced by our material senses, our range of experience is only limited to our senses, nothing else. What we see is what we feel, what we hear is what we feel, what we touch is what we feel. So anything that you ascertain with your intelligence, anything that you experience with your senses, anything you express with your mouth, and anything that you concoct within this mind, concoct means that which is not true, you just make it to be true. Sometimes we see someone, for example, he looks very serious, so we say he is a serious person. But actually, without understanding him properly, we don't know if he is serious or not. Someone is very angry. Someone may say something, but we take it out of context. We misunderstand. In this Kali Yuga, it is full of this kind of things. Even as devotees, we should be very careful not to drag ourselves into the material designations and the energies. Because we often place a judgment on someone. And when that happens, it's all to do with our material senses and the concoctions of our material mind. So Daksha is correct. He says everything that is here has nothing to do with the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He used the word nature. Because this material world, this universal form of the Lord, is actually within it, within this universal form of the Lord, is consisting, this universal form of the Lord is consisting of the three modes of the material nature, which is governed by the material nature, which is also the material energy of the Lord. So, Daksha makes this point, that if you use your material senses to try and understand Krishna, you cannot understand him because he has nothing to do with his nature. It is like comparing apples with oranges. You can't compare them because they are totally different nature. If you put both of them together and say which is a better fruit, it's not a proper comparison. If you put two apples together, you know, maybe red and the green apple, then you can compare. But if you put apples and oranges, there's no basis for comparison. So we should remember, very often Prabhu said, Mataji, this material mind, mouth, senses, will tell us the conclusions which are material. But they have nothing to do with Krishna, nothing to do with his nature. When that happens, then we should understand that Krishna is Vishuddha Lakshanaha. He is beyond the range of the material creation, and he is the cause of the material creation. So we should not be too much attached to this material energy that is present before us. The more attachment there is to this material energy of this universe, definitely from attachment will come interaction. From interaction will come attachment. From attachment will come interaction. They just increase one after the other. And when you increase your attachment to the material world, then what happens? Then we become very interested in the universal form or the material world of the Lord, but we don't know how to come out of it because we are actually not interested in understanding his true transcendental nature. And when that happens, then the situation comes to the point where we try to exploit the material energy of the Lord for our own purposes. When you want to enjoy and exploit the material energy of the Lord for your own purpose, this material energy will frustrate you. If you try to test the material energy of the material energy will frustrate you. Arjuna wanted to see just a darshan of the Lord's universal form. By the end of this chapter, he has had enough of seeing the universal form of the Lord. Why? Because the universal form of the Lord was not attractive to him. It was mind-boggling. It was bewildering. It was illusory. But it was not transcendently satisfying. There is a difference between the real nature of the Lord, which is what devotees are aspiring for, and the universal form, which is actually created for us because we desire to be separate from the Lord. There is a nice episode, you know, in Srimad Bhagavatam. It is in the 12th canto. In 12th canto, there was this great sage known as Markandeya Muni. Markandeya Rishi was a very powerful sage. So he was a very powerful sage and he was a great devotee of the Lord. He wanted very much, he was praying to the Lord in the form of Naranarayana Rishi. And he was in the ashram somewhere in the Himalayas, you know, known as Pushpabhadra. Pushpabhadra ashram is a very famous ashram. And there, all the devotees who want to aspire to remember the Lord and concentrate on Him, they leave this material world and they come and spend their time there meditating on the form of the Lord. So Markandeya Rishi was meditating so much on the form of the Lord. And one day, by the grace of the Lord descended and gave him darshan in the form of Naranarayana Rishi. So Naranarayana Rishi is none other than incarnation of the Lord. And he asked, Markandeya Rishi, first of all, paid obeisances and he glorified the Lord. At the end of it, the Lord asked him, is there something I can do for you? And Markandeya Rishi said, yes, I very much desire to see the workings of your illusory energy. Very much. I want to see how powerful this illusory energy of yours is. I want to know, I've heard so much that this illusory energy of yours is so powerful, it can bewilder the greatest of the sages' mind even. So, what is this illusory energy and how powerful it is? Please tell me. So, like that, he was asking. And after praying, Markandeya Rishi got his boon. Naranarayana Rishi then blessed him. And they told him that, so be it. If you want to see how this illusory form of mind actually works, then I give you the blessings to see it. After Naranarayana Rishi left, Markandeya Muni sat down and meditated on the form of the Lord. He was very eager in his heart to see. But while he waited and waited and waited, nothing happened. He waited for a few days and still nothing happened. He waited and waited thinking, when is this illusory energy of the Lord going to come? But it didn't come. One day in the morning, Markandeya Rishi woke up, and as usual, he woke up, offered his prayers, and offered his dandavats. And he was sitting down and meditating on the form of the Lord on the banks of Pushpabhadra, when suddenly a strong wind arose. Very strong wind. Bhagavatam tells us this wind was so powerful that it started moving clouds, storm clouds, very quickly over the mountain ranges and across the whole world. The wind was howling. It was so powerful that in an instant, these storm clouds began gathering around the entire earth, and with suddenly accompanied by thunder and lightning, it was a very, very scary situation. The thunder, the roar of the thunder was so thunderous that the hearts of the inhabitants of Pushpabhadra skipped a beat. And as the thunder clouds gathered, heavy rains ensued. As the heavy rains came pouring down on earth, the heavy rains, Bhagavatam describes to us, were as heavy as wheels on a wagon. That's how heavy the rains were as they hit this earth. These torrents of rain started pouring and pouring and pouring for days and days without stopping. And Markandeya was wondering, what has happened to the weather? It was not like that. Weather forecast in Pushpabhadra is normally calm and peaceful. This is very unusual. What has happened? And then before he knew it, he then began to see around him the four great oceans of the world were beginning to rise. They were beginning to rise. And as they rose, they began to inundate all the lowlands of this world. The rain did not stop. And the oceans, the roar of the waves, the powerful waves, they began to inundate everything around the mountain ranges. In fact, as the roar of the waves came and the oceans increased in height, very powerful monsters of the ocean, great fishes of the ocean began swimming. And whirlpools began forming. And the thunder and lightning did not cease. A very, very powerful storm came. And as the storm gathered momentum, as the days went on, this rishi realized that this entire world was becoming flooded. The lowlands and the islands were completely inundated. Now, as the rains fell from the heavens, even the oceans rose and rose and they began to cover the hills, the mountain ranges, and eventually the entire world that we know as Earth. But they did not stop there. As Markandeya Rishi watched in amazement, these waters rose and rose and rose until they inundated the entire universe. Even the heavens came under the water. Great fishes like Makara and Timingala, these are fishes which we have not heard of now, but they are great powerful sharks and huge whales, 10, 20, 30 times bigger than what we see. They were just moving around in the waters, trying to find for anything that they could find as food. As the waters just continued rising, this entire world became completely still. Not a survivor of the world remained, Bhagavatam tells us, except for Markandeya Rishi. For millions of years, he struggled in the water, not one day, 2 days. For millions of years, he just swam in the waters. Sometimes he was attacked by the fishes. Sometimes he was caught in whirlpools. Sometimes he barely survived. His matted locks were in disarray. He was hungry. He was thirsty. There was no food. There was no land. There was nowhere for him to hold. Sometimes he was perplexed. Sometimes he lost complete hope. Some days he became a little bit happier because he thought there may be hope. And other times he was lamenting. And other times he was in grief. And other times he thought he was peaceful. But it never lasted. Like that, he just traveled and traveled and traveled, completely bewildered by what was happening in this world. Where was his Pushpabhadra ashram? Where was the quietude and the peace that he was having? It was all gone. And how long more could he continue, he was thinking, because he was losing strength to stay afloat in the water. And as that time came, there was only darkness in the world. There was no sunlight. There was nothing. And in the darkness, one day, Markandeya Rishi spied from afar a glowing effulgence. As he started swimming towards that glowing effulgence, he realized that out of the middle of this ocean, vast ocean, where no worlds, no universes in this material world existed now, there was an island. And on that island, there was a beautiful banyan tree in full blossom with fruits and everything. And on that tree, in the northernmost portion of that tree, he saw that there was a beautiful leaf. And on that huge banyan leaf, there was a beautiful boy. This boy appeared like a baby. He was bluish in color, and Bhagavatam's description of him is actually indescribable because he is so exquisitely described. And one wonderful feature of taking darshan of this boy that Markandeya Rishi found was that whatever pain and suffering and lamentation he was having in his heart up till then for a million years was finished. It completely was vanquished. It vanished. He felt a peace in his heart which he had never felt before, and a pleasure in his heart just by taking darshan of this wonderful, wonderful child. And as he saw with amazement, this child smiled at him, picked up his toe from his foot and put it into his mouth and sucked on it. And this glorious image was so wonderful that Markandeya Rishi was wondering, how and where did this child come from? And exactly at that point, as he was thinking of that, Bhagavatam tells us, the child then suddenly inhaled. He took a deep breath. And the moment he took a deep breath, Markandeya Rishi found himself being sucked into the mouth of the child. Just like a mosquito, he just sucked into, you know, a big vacuum. And he found himself inside the child. But instead of seeing what we would see inside ourselves, which is all material, and this is not very pleasurable or palatable, Markandeya Rishi saw the entire universe as it was before dissolution. He saw the sky, he saw the sun, he saw the forces of nature, he saw everything around this world. He saw the universes, he saw the heavenly planets, he saw the subterranean planets, he saw this earth with this beautiful mountain ranges and everything. He saw the Himalayas, he saw Pushpabhadra Ashram, and he saw himself sitting down in the morning before dissolution, praying and offering prayers to the Lord. And at that point of time, he was thinking how wondrous this is. Already he was perplexed. Now he's more perplexed. He was thinking, how is all this happening? And at that point of time, just when he was thinking, how is it that I'm inside this child and I'm seeing myself, then the child exhaled. And the moment he exhaled, Markandeya Rishi found himself being propelled out of the child into the ocean. And as he sat, as he swam in the ocean, struggling again, he saw the child further and further and further away until the child, the tree, the banyan tree, and the island completely vanished. And the moment the island completely vanished, Markandeya Rishi saw himself seated, found himself seated at Pushpabhadra Ashram, exactly where he was just like a minute ago, and he was ready to offer prayers to the Lord. And at that point of time, Markandeya Rishi realized, this is the illusory energy of the Lord. It is so powerful. This universal form of the Lord, which encompasses the entire creation, is so powerful and bewildering that we should be very careful how to treat it. We should not exploit this material energy. Don't test material energy. Don't compete with material energy, because you will lose. What is it? There's that verse, isn't it? 7:14 of Bhagavad Gita. Daini, Esha Kudumai, Mama Maya Durajaya. Right? Krishna himself says very nicely, this divine energy of mind, which is consisting of the three modes of the material nature, is very difficult to overcome. Mama Maya, Durajaya. Durajaya is very difficult. Very difficult. But he says there is a way to get out of it. How is that way? He says the only way we can do it is Mam Eva. Mam Eva. Certainly there's only one way. Mam Eva Leya Prapadyate. If one surrenders to the Lord, to surrender to the Lord, Prabhu said, Mataji, you must surrender to the transcendental nature of the Lord. You must understand that point. We must understand that point. That we want to take darshan of the Lord in His transcendental form. We want to render transcendental loving service to Him. One cannot engage with the universal form of the Lord, because you'll be too bewildered to engage. Probably you will end up engaging yourself in Maya only. And then you will fool yourself into thinking that I am a devotee. But actually you are exploiting something for your own interest. But a devotee who lives in this material world, when he is praying to the transcendental form of the Lord, he doesn't exploit material energy. He uses material energy in service of the Lord. This is material energy. This is coming from the universal form of the Lord. It is all encompassing. But because we are using it to broadcast the glories of the Lord, this broadcasting becomes very pleasing and satisfying and sanctifying and purifying to all the hearts of not only people in Lakshmana Temple, but the entire universe. Jagat Pavitram, Pradhanita Kandichit. Jagat Pavitram, the entire universe, 1/10 of Srimad Bhagavatam, the entire universe becomes sanctified. Bhagavatam will say, just by chanting anything to do with the nature of the Lord, which is transcendental. That is why we must. Markandeya Rishi was a very powerful personality. He wanted to see the illusory energy of the Lord for our benefit finally. We should learn from these great personalities how not to engage our time in trying to understand how the workings of the world is, because you cannot. You will simply be bewildered. Instead of wasting our time there concocting, instead of wasting our time expressing material things which have no value apart from Krishna, instead of using our senses in the objects which have nothing to do with Krishna, better we use everything we have in the service of the Lord. And by doing that, the Lord becomes pleased, His devotees become pleased. This is the point we should remember. And when we do that, then those who have surrendered unto me, right? Mam Eva Ye Prapadyante, Maya Etam Tarantite. They can easily cross over this material energy of mine. So Krishna gives that assurance. Just take shelter of Him and His devotees. And the devotional process, take shelter of it very intensely. And if you take shelter of it, in your most darkest and most difficult of moments, this devotional service will keep you afloat. into your clothes, and it will allow you to always take darshan of the Lord in your heart through the mercy of the devotees. This is an important point we must remember. The second point we must remember in this verse is the fact that in the purport, Prabhupada very nicely states this point. He says in the purport that neither Sanjaya or Dhritarashtra were actually present to witness this universal form. They were not. Right? Sanjaya was sitting next to Dhritarashtra and they were far away from the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Yet, one person could see the universal form and one person did not. Dhritarashtra did not see the universal form. Sanjaya had the vision of the universal form. Prabhupada says, because he had the grace of Vyasa Bhagavan, who he accepted as his preceptor and his spiritual master. This is a fundamental point in devotional service. This is the key for our survival in devotional service. In one simple line, Srila Prabhupada has given us the essence of the devotional service. And that is that we can either choose to be like Dhritarashtra or we can choose to be like Sanjaya. Sanjaya's qualification was that he was given the grace of Vyasa Bhagavan. Why was he given grace of Vyasa Bhagavan? Because Vyasa Bhagavan was pleased with him. That is why he gave him grace. And the Lord did not want anyone who would be a non-devotee to speak to Dhritarashtra about this wonderful vision of the Lord. Lord won't choose a demon to speak about visions of the Lord. He won't. The qualification of Sanjaya is given here. Not that he had great qualities, but because his great qualities has come by the grace of the spiritual master. That is why today we are gathered here to pray for the well-being of Jetulaka Maharaj. Why? Because without the blessings of spiritual masters like him, we cannot get any grace from the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. Our gratitude to him and to the spiritual masters in his court and in our sampradaya can never be repaid. Our gratitude to them may be millionfold, but our debt to them remains unpaid. Because we cannot pay the debt for which we are bound. The sacrifice that these great souls have taken so that we can somehow or another remember Krishna is beyond description. It is as indescribable as the universal form of Lord, if not more. This we should remember. Sanjaya's qualification was that he was given grace. Why was he given grace? He was given grace because he possessed one important quality. And this quality we know from the pages of Bhagavatam. Why? Because in the very first chapter of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the sages who assembled, you know, to hear Sutta Goswami speak. Because Sutta Goswami would now speak about what he had heard, about the next set of events of how Sukadeva Goswami has spoken about Bhagavatam. The sages approached Sutta Goswami and they requested Sutta Goswami to speak. Why? The qualification that Sutta Goswami had is nicely stated in the pages of Bhagavatam 1.1.8. We should remember this verse very nicely. Vedatvam saumyatat sarvam tadvatasat anugrahan. Bro, anugrahan is very important, Prabhu Swami. Anugrahan means he's following. He's following. Why is this important? Because the sages start by saying, because you are submissive, because you are submissive to your spiritual master, because you are submissive and gentle, right? Your spiritual master has endowed you. Your spiritual master has endowed you with all the favors that can be bestowed upon a gentle disciple. This is the reason why a disciple who is serious in devotional service gains the grace of his spiritual master. The qualification for such a disciple to gain the grace of the spiritual master is one, he must be submissive. He must be submissive. And when he's submissive means, very simple, it means that whatever the spiritual master orders for him to do, he takes it as non-different as his life's mission and his soul's mission. It becomes his very life. If his spiritual master has instructed him that you do this, 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 he takes it up as his life and his soul. Non-different. For the whole lifetime, he just grabs that service, grabs service very tightly and never let go of the lotus feet of the spiritual master. That is the qualification of a disciple. The other qualification that is very important for one to be submissive and to obtain the grace of the spiritual master is the fact that he is never inimical or resentful of the teachings and the instructions of the spiritual master and the Supreme Lord. This line is given to us in 3rd chapter, 31st verse of Srimad Bhagavad Gita. If you have Bhagavad Gita, you please look to the purport. In that purport, in that last line, the verse is important. Ye ve matam idam nityam, anutishyanti manavaha, shraddhavantu anasyato, right? Uchyanti devi karmabhihi. This verse tells us, Krishna tells us, those who follow my injunctions and my instructions, how? Without envy, with full faith, to these people, I will give them the liberation from the cycle of birth and death. So the following of the instructions is the sign of submission to the spiritual master. It is also the success of the devotional service. And in the last part of the purport, Prabhupada writes very beautifully. Personally, I find the last few verses, the last few lines in that purport, Prabhupada Samadhi, very, very helpful in my devotional life. Because in that last few lines, I don't know whether I have it here, yes, I can read it. Because it is so important for us as devotees to remember this one. Prabhupada says here, just give me a minute. It is here. Yes. In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, which is where we all are, one may not fully discharge the injunctions of the Lord. The question always is asked, sometimes I'm trying, but I cannot fully discharge. I'm not your devotee. What do you expect me to do? Prabhupada answers this point. In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, one may not fully discharge the injunctions of the Lord. But because one is not resentful of this principle and works sincerely without consideration of defeat and hopelessness, he will surely be promoted to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness. So, if we really want to take the grace of the spiritual master like Sanjaya received, we must be submissive. To be submissive means we must follow his instructions. And how to follow his instructions? We must never be resentful of his instructions. Never be inimical of his instructions. Never think that we know better. Or not say it outwardly, but in our heart we think, this is a ridiculous order that Guru is giving, you know. How can it be? You know, Srila Prabhupada set such a high standard, my Guru Maharaj set such a high standard, but these Gurus, they have not only set such a high standard, they have maintained it. They have set the examples for us. All we have to do is see them and follow them. That is the proper use of our material senses. When we do that, then as Daksha correctly prayed, our senses have nothing to do with the material energy of Krishna. They become transcendental because we are trying to serve our spiritual master. What did Dhritarashtra do, Prabhus and Mahajis? The question here is more precisely put as what he did not do. What Dhritarashtra did not do was, he did not submit to the plan of Krishna. He was very envious of the Lord. He wanted the interests of his sons, the Kauravas, to be ahead of the interests of the vision of the Lord. And because he was not in line with the vision of the Lord, the whole dynasty coming from him was completely decimated. Not because of the Lord, but because the entire dynasty was inimical and resentful of the principles put forward by Krishna. And because his entire dynasty, including himself, they had the grabbing tendency. They wanted everything for the purposes of exploiting material energy for their own enjoyment, not for the service of the Lord. That is why the Lord wanted specifically in Bhagavad Gita that the Kauravas must be killed. Because if they had taken over the entire world, this entire world would have been exploited. The entire material energy of the Lord would have been laid to waste. And if that was the case, the Lord's establishment of principles would completely vanish. The Lord did not want to allow that. That is why Dhritarashtra was not only physically blind, but he was spiritually blind unfortunately also. This is a sad thing actually. You remember one episode when he showed how envious he was of Krishna, that at one point of time after all the Kauravas had been killed on the battlefield, Krishna came and like a true, really following the true principles of Vedic etiquette, he actually came forward to express his condolences to Dhritarashtra and Gandhari. And when he came forward to Dhritarashtra, Dhritarashtra wanted to give him a hug, an embrace. And when he wanted to embrace, his embrace was actually very powerful. But he thought that by embracing, he would actually be able to crush. But he could not crush anyone, because Krishna is supreme. Krishna protects his devotees. And in the end, Dhritarashtra was once again left completely frustrated. Dhritarashtra stayed on in the house of the Pandavas, Bhagavatam says, like a dog who lives on the leftovers, right, of his masters. Why? Because he was still attached to sitting on his throne. Yudhishthira Maharaj had said, never mind, I have conquered, you have conquered everything. But Dhritarashtra, we will still, because you are our uncle, we will still treat you, you know, like a de facto king. You can sit on your throne, we will take care and serve you. And for that one opportunity to continue sitting on his throne, which meant nothing now, because he had no kingdom with him, Dhritarashtra persisted in staying on. It was only by the grace of his brother. Who was his brother? Vidur. It was by the grace of his brother, just like by the grace of Vyas, that Dhritarashtra finally, towards the end stage of his life, he gained the spiritual understanding at least to come out of the cycle of his material birth and death. So without the grace of the devotees, it is not possible for us to come out of this difficult material energy of the Lord. On our own, we become like Markandeya Rishi, completely perplexed, completely bewildered. This point we must remember. But Sanjaya was very, very nice. Sanjaya was so submissive, and because he was submissive, all vision to see the Lord was given to him. Even though Arjuna prayed all his verses, Sanjaya got the benefit of his prayer. Isn't it? Arjuna prayed and heard Krishna and sat down through the battlefield. Sanjaya didn't have to do anything. He just sat down by the grace of Vyasa Bhagavan. Full vision of Bhagavad Gita was in his heart and he could speak about it to Dhritarashtra. This is the benefit of being with devotee. Bhakte Bhakte Janapriyaha. We are going to do Damodar Leela now, isn't it? And in Damodar Leela, the first part of the Leela is the Lord's mercy to his pure devotee, Mother Yashoda, and the reciprocal exchange of love between her and Lord Krishna. The second part is equally important. The second part is where Manigriva and Nalakubera, the twin sons, right, who formed the Arjuna trees, they were brought down by the force of Krishna pushing through the water. The moment they appeared, what happened to them? They were actually great beings. They offered obeisances to Krishna. And we understand that their story in the past is very, very wondrous. They were two brothers, sons of Kuvera, because they were so intoxicated with wealth. Bhagavatam tells us they were just sporting in the lakes without any clothes, drinking and having a good time. They were exploiting the material energy of the Lord fully, without using it at all in service. One day, Nathamuni passed by, and as he passed by, being such a great personality, even the ladies who were in the lake had the decency to get up, dress themselves and pay obeisances and walk away. But these two sons of Kuvera, they were so intoxicated by their material energy and wealth that they completely did not even bother to cover themselves up. And they appeared very unsightly before a great devotee of the Lord. Nathamuni cursed them, big open inverted commas. He cursed them. He said that, since you don't like to wear clothes, I think the best thing for you is, you know, in your next life, why should you be wearing clothes? Better you become trees. Because trees, you know, you don't have to wear pants for the trees. Trees don't go shopping for clothes. They are just completely naked, but they accept it. No problems. And since you're so attached to these material opulences, you should become more detached. But you won't do it on your own accord, you know, because you're too attached now. So in your next life, I pray that you become trees. Because if you become trees, then one, you don't have to wear clothes. But two, even better, is that trees cannot exploit material energy. They must remain still. They cannot do anything. So you become detached, possibly. And there you stay. But, I'm sorry. But Narada Muni also prayed. He prayed that I pray that somehow or another, he prayed to the Lord, Lord, I pray somehow or another that these two sons of Kubera, who are very young but who are misguided and who are too much attached to the material energy of the Lord, I pray that in their next life at least, somehow or another, they must take the darshan. And by taking the darshan, they will become completely successful in their life. So, Narada Muni prayed and he went away. And the two brothers became the Yamuna Arjuna trees. There they stood for thousands and thousands of years until Baby Krishna, Lord Krishna in his form as Lord Damodar, was playing his wonderful, enacting his wonderful pastime with the Lord, his mother, Yashoda. And then he decided, let's kill two birds with one stone. This is the super excellence of Krishna. In one pastime, he does so many things. He is the true multitasker. Long before this idea of multitasking was there, Krishna is transcendentally multitasker. Why? Because in one leela, he can achieve so many transcendental objectives. So he went through the trees, brought the trees down, and when the two sons came out and paid obeisances and prayed nicely to Krishna, Krishna had one prayer that we should remember. He says in the 10th canto, I forget the Sanskrit actually, but I remember the verse. The verse goes like this. Krishna tells, he tells these two devotees, he tells these two sons, he says that, I do not personally want to liberate you. In fact, frankly, I don't even know you. I had no dealings with you. For me, you are just living entities only. But because my pure devotee, Narada Muni, by his grace, he wanted somehow or another for you to be delivered. I have become bound for it by his promise. I have become bound. In the same way that he has become bound by Mother Yashoda, the transcendental pastime of him bringing down the two trees is actually his becoming bound by the loving dealings of Narada-ji, who is also an equally exalted devotee. And so Krishna said, I don't know who you are, I don't know where you came from, but I just know one thing. One pure devotee has petitioned that you must become liberated. That's all I need to know. Because he is a great devotee, whatever he says will come true, and I cannot but find a way to make it true. And so I have arranged that you will become liberated. Where will you get someone who is more merciful than Krishna? And where will you find someone who is more merciful than the devotee, the supreme, the great, pure devotees of Krishna? You will never find this. Of all the most precious things in this world, Prabhu said, Mataji, in conclusion, we must never forget one thing. The precious nature of an exalted devotee, our spiritual masters, Srila Prabhupada, and all the acharyas in the Sampradaya, we should pray daily with great gratitude that they are here and that they have given us this mercy. We should pray now that those who are here with us now, like Jayadatta Maharaj, should live for 50 to 100 years more, so that they will continuously keep us engaged in devotional service. Pranad Maharaj prayed this in 7th canto, 9th chapter. Evam janam nipatitam prabhavai kupe kritva evam janam nipatitam prabhavai kupe kamati kama manya patatan prasanga kritva prasad surashida bhagavan rajitaha soham katam nubisaje tava pritya sevam. Tava pritya sevam. Sevam means sevam. Now, this prayer of Pradhan Maharaj we should remember. Evam janam nipatitam prabhavahe kupe. He says to Narasingha Dev, Lord, because of my association with material nature, which is the material energy of the Lord, which is being exhibited now before Arjuna in the form of the universal form, because I was so much associated with this material energy, and therefore I developed material desires one after another. And because these desires were always there, I was gradually falling into the well, andaku, this well of ignorance and darkness. This is the material world. So this is our position actually, that we are gradually or we have fallen, but we are in the well. Why? Because our exploiting of the material energy, because of our grabbing tendencies, because we want more than what we have, because we always are not satisfied with what Krishna and Guru has given us. Because we always concoct in our minds problems when there are no problems. This is why we become deeper and deeper in this level. Then Prahlad Maharaj says, but somehow or another, because of the mercy of your great devotee Narada Muni, you remember, it was Narada Ji who spoke and preached to Prahlad Maharaj in the womb of his mother Kayadu. And at that time he gave him all the principles of devotional service. So Prahlad Maharaj is remembering and thanking Narada Muni, even while the Lord is present. He is thanking his spiritual master, Narada Ji. This is gratitude. This is correct perception of who has given us Krishna. And by doing that, he says, because your servant Narada Ji kindly accepted me as his disciple, this is why I have achieved this transcendental position today. Prahlad didn't say, I've achieved it. I'm a 5-year-old boy, you know. I'm a child prodigy, you know. I just thought of you and, you know, you've got all this great karma accumulated. No. He said, it was only because of one reason, Lord. And that reason was because of your servant Narada Ji. Why is this important in this context? Because Narasingadev was ready to offer him the kingdom. Narasingadev was ready to glorify him. But Prahlad Maharaj says, it's not me. It's my guru. It's Narada Ji. So then he says the last line. He says very nicely, soham, soham, katam. Katam in Sanskrit is nice. How can I? Soham, katam. So how can I? You tell me, how can I? He's asking this question. How can I leave the service of such an exalted personality for anything else in this world? Soham, katam, nubisje, tava, britya, seva. How can I leave? Britya means, britya means to touch. Literally it means to touch. Tava Britya Seva, how can I leave the touch of my service to the Supreme, to the devotee, who has, to the pure devotee who has introduced me to the Supreme Personality of Godhead? This is the key that we should depend on devotional service. So in conclusion, two things come to mind. One is the fact that never become like Dhritarashtra. Always remember that Sanjaya has a unique place in Bhagavad Gita. He was a gentle, submissive devotee, and because Vyas Bhagavan was happy with him, just happy with him, he attained so much grace to see the vision of the Lord. If we serve our spiritual masters and all devotees, because every devotee we can learn from. We may have our Diksha Guru, but everyone can become our Siksha Gurus. We can learn every principle of devotional service from everyone. When we look at someone, we should not look at his bad qualities. Because to look at that means to look to the material energy of the Lord. But we should concentrate on the qualities which are very nice about the devotee. It may catch our heart, you know, this devotee, this part of him I don't like, you know, and we label it as bad. But we may not understand why he's like that, or why she's like that. So Bhagavatam tells us different people have different mentalities. Right? This Avadhut, you know, Prahlad Maharaj speaks to him. Namam Ninde, Nachasavni. You know, it is in 7th canto, 13th chapter. It's the last, second last verse. Prahlad Maharaj asks the Avadhut, how do you move around this world? What is your attitude in this world? And he says something which we should all keep in mind. He says that different persons have different mentalities. If you remember this line, Prabhu said, Matris, never we will be disturbed when we relate to devotees. We'll never be disturbed if we remember this line. Why? Different devotees have different mentalities. That's all. You cannot expect one devotee to be like you. The start of our problem in devotional service is when we expect you to be like me. And then we give the reasons why you should be like me. Or we say you have created a position of expectation. But we must understand different people have different mentalities. That's the various major nature of this material world. This is the thing. Nature of water is to flow. Nature of fire is to burn. Nature of material world is variety. Variety means you cannot expect me to be another clone. If Krishna wanted clones, he would have done so. He didn't. Because there's variety in the material world. If we can't cooperate with each other now in service to the Lord, no chance in the material, in spiritual world. Krishna will deny your ticket. Because he says, you haven't passed the test here, man. How are you going to survive up there? There, no room. No room for mistakes. You are supposed to be transcendental. Here, plenty of room for mistakes. Different people have different mentalities. It is not my business, the other two says, to either criticize them, nor to praise them. I don't need to praise them, I don't need to criticize them. I just pray for their welfare, that they will become one in their vision and interests with the Supreme Lord. Best prayer. Best prayer. In this mood, if we cultivate our devotional service, we will gain the grace of the spiritual master. Then whatever spiritual master wants us to see, wants us to serve, then it's up to him. And the next point you must remember is what Kapila Dev actually told at the end of his entire discussion on Sankhya Yoga in the third canto. It is in third canto, 32nd chapter. It's the last chapter. Third canto, 32nd chapter. I think the verses will flow from 39, 40, 41, 42. Four verses. These four verses are very important. Jiva Goswami has commented on these four verses also. Why? Because in these four verses, Kapila Dev finally ends by telling Devahuti Mata, I have now told you all the principles of the science of devotional service. But please remember this one thing, Mother. These instructions are meant for certain kinds of persons. In one way, they are meant for everyone. But if you want to absorb these instructions, you must develop these qualities. So, who are the persons who cannot absorb these instructions? He says, the envious cannot absorb these instructions. The agnostics cannot absorb these instructions. One who is unclean in his behavior finds it difficult to absorb devotional service. One who is a hypocrite cannot absorb devotional service. One who is greedy for wealth, one who is too much attached to family life, one who is completely a non-devotee, one who is envious of the Supreme Lord, all these persons, this instruction will just fly by them. It will fly by them. Who will receive this instruction very nicely, he also gives in the next two verses. He says, this instruction is actually meant for the faithful devotee who is respectful of his spiritual master. Not even the Supreme Lord, but his spiritual master, who is non-envious and who is friendly to all kinds of living entities and always eager to render service with faith and devotion. Hare Krishna. Jai Nandara Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki. Jai Nandara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki. Jai His Holiness Jagadatha Swami Maharaj Ki. Vitai Gaura Premani.
Jai Shri Krishnananda Prabhuji Ki.
Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki. Can I request devotees that if you have questions, we put it aside just for today, so that we can chant, all of us chant together, one mala, one round of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, with as much sincerity and devotion that we can muster. We pray that His Holiness Jayapadatta Swami Maharaj, Acharya Pad, we pray for His health. We pray very much that Krishna will somehow or another, because Krishna is so great, will give him long life and make him come out of this difficult situation and continue to preach as powerfully and as enthusiastically and purely as he has done throughout this world. My only request is if you have your chanting beads, then please take them out now. Normally devotees will never go without their chanting beads, so that's a good sign.
Can you please chant at least one minute?